Welcome to episode 243 of the Ski Podcast, and thanks for joining us, listener. Today, we're going to be talking to the makers of Going East, a new ski film from Arc'teryx. In Going East, a team of four skiers make their way to ski in Italy, Austria, then Slovakia, Bulgaria, Romania, and finally Turkey, all by public transport, with not a single flight. In total, they took 35 trains, 24 buses, 7 metros, 2 trams, and spent over 140 hours travelling. They had to deal with language differences, connections, and passport checks in the middle of the night. At one point, they even lost a member of their team completely. Yet, when you listen to our conversation, you'll find out why they think the journey was important as the skiing itself, and why they'd do it again. Now, I was joined by Sylvia Moser and Joy Hoffman, two of the athletes who made the film, and we'll listen to that conversation shortly. We'll be back with our regular snow reports and news features in episode 244, but I'm delighted to announce that we have a new competition to win eyewear from Vallon. You might recall in episode 237, we gave away some Vallon goggles, and this time around, we have some of their Watchtower Sunnies on offer. All you need to do to enter the competition is to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, write a comment on Spotify, or write a comment on Instagram. We'll pick a winner at random and announce the result in episode 245 next month. And if you can't wait until then, well, Vallon's end-of-season ski sale is on right now with 25 to 35% off their ski eyewear range. I'll put a link in the show notes to that. Now, I know there's not long left of the season, but if you want to help the Ski Podcast and save yourself some money this winter, all you need to do is use the code SKIPODCAST when you book your ski hire at InSportRent.com. I'd like to thank everyone who's used the code already this winter. It helps fund the podcast, and I really appreciate it. So, just as a reminder, use the code SKIPODCAST at InSportRent.com or simply take the link in the show notes for your discount to be automatically applied. Right, let's get on with today's show and find out how Hoy, Sylvia and the Arc'teryx team filmed Going East. I'm delighted to be joined today by Sylvia Moser and Joy Hoffman. Hi, guys. How are you? Let's start with you, Sylvia. How are you?
Hi. I'm super good. Thanks.
I should probably say come stai because you're in Italy, right?
Come stai? Tutto bene.
Excellent. And whereabouts are you?
I'm in Cortina, in the Dolomites.
Fantastic. Well, that's a name that most people will recognise. Going to be very exciting in just under a year's time when the Olympics come to Cortina. Have you seen any preparations for that already?
Yeah, well, quite a lot. Actually, there's a lot of things going on now, and hopefully they will be ready for the main event.
Well, I'm sure they will be. Let's turn to Joy. Whereabouts are you based?
I am in Innsbruck, Austria.
Not very far away. In fact, I went through, well, past both of your areas recently because I was in Selva Val Gardena last weekend and I took the train back. And the train went from Ponta Gardena into Innsbruck and then up on the way. And that's definitely a link with what we're going to be talking about today, because I thought that was a long train journey. It took me about 24 hours to get back to the UK. But you guys spent a lot of time on trains, and we'll come on to that. Can I just ask a quick question? I always like to ask my guests when you last skied or snowboarded. What was that for you, Sylvia? When were you last on snow?
Actually, this weekend. But it was really conservative skiing, let's say, because it's snowing and raining up high in the Dolomites this week. So it was quite actually also unstable conditions. So just like being around the slopes and a bit on the trees, but very, very easy.
Yeah, I did read this morning there had been an avalanche in the Dolomiti area. So
Sunday.
You say unstable. Yeah, that heavy snow can be dangerous. And Joy, what about yourself? When were you last skiing?
I was skiing on Friday, like 4 days ago. It was quite good. Powder snow, a little bit warm though, but it was good. And today would be the perfect day for skiing. It's sunny, fresh snow, and I think whole Innsbruck is out there in the mountains except me.
Well, we won't hold you up too long Joy. Where were you skiing on Friday?
Where? Just around Innsbruck, just a close by ski resort at Kütai.
Okay, cool. Well, the reason I wanted to have you both on the show today is because of the new film from Arc'teryx, Going East.
which I've watched a couple of times now, and this is a fantastic film, highly entertaining and really interesting. You know, I'm a lover of train travel. Maybe it would be interesting, perhaps, if you explain the concept of it, Joy. Maybe you could do that.
Well, the concept of the film, you see it yourself. It's just like trying to accomplish a proper ski journey by public transport. That's what the main idea was. Like, as I'm already also saying in the movie, I don't have a car, so I'm used to travel that way. I never did something that long, that big, but it was just out of curiosity if it would be possible to do it and how far we can get.
Yeah, as we'll discover, you went an extremely long way. This, you know, like I said, I thought me going out to the Dolomites by train seemed like a long way. What about yourself, Sylvia? How did you get brought into this project?
Well, the boys spoke to me about this idea. And also for my side, it was a lot about curiosity and to see if it was doable, actually, because at first I was also in a way a bit skeptical, because in the Dolomites, or let's say the public transport, it's not very efficient. Other than the main cities, the bigger cities, it's quite hard to move with public transport. So I love traveling by train, but I'm not always able to do it because of this kind of lack of communication in some places. So yeah, I was super curious about it.
Well, it sounds like you're saying you're interested to do it. It was for environmental reasons, though, as well, that you're looking to try and create this journey.
Not necessarily. It's just because it's there. Like, the connections are there. Like, the rails are there. You can do it. That wasn't the main purpose to do it, for the environmental friendly traveling. Of course, it's a good add-on, I would say.
As someone who loves traveling by train, to me, the journey is part of it. And for you, making Going East, you'd say that the journey was as important as the skiing itself. Did you feel that, Sylvia?
I think it was even more important than the skiing, actually, because it made everything really special, and you also are able to connect a lot more with the culture of the places, other than just arriving with a car and entering kind of in a bubble and you don't really get the feeling. Skiing was just the top of it, but underneath there was a lot more, I would say.
Yeah, that's really interesting, actually, because my wife came with me on the train on the way back from Italy. And she said that, you know, one of the things that impressed upon her traveling by train, she'd actually flown out, is the distance. You know, just how far you are. If you get in a car or a plane, maybe you just don't notice that in the same way because you're not in contact with the environment as you're moving from one place to another, which you definitely are. Because let's come on to the logistics of Going East. I mean, the idea was you're going to start in Western Europe, let's say, and just head east and see how far you can get. And you know, anyone who's watched a film, and if you haven't, I'm guessing you will do, you're gonna make it as far as Turkey. I had a look. I think at one point it says you took 35 trains, 24 buses, 7 metro rides, 2 trams, and 140 hours of journey time. I don't know if you guys have ever seen there's a TV series called Race Across the World. Have you ever either of you familiar with that at all?
No.
What they do is people compete in pairs and they have to get from A to B without taking any flights. Oh. It reminded me a lot of that. They're in bus stations trying to work out how to get to the next place, etc. I'm actually just interested from a logistics point of view. Did you like have an Joy, did you have an Interrail ticket, or did you just buy tickets as you went along?
Yeah, we just booked the Interrail ticket. That this the by far the easiest way to do it, because you always have the ticket, you don't have to organize that much. But of course, what the Interrail pass is missing, or additionally, you have to book like the reservations for the seat, for the sleeping coach, and stuff like that. And that was quite tricky, because you can arrange like the connections on the Interrail app as well, but on some connections it says, yeah, reservation is mandatory, and so you can't always book them online. You have to go to a counter and try to talk to the people and try to make them understand what we really need.
Yeah. I mean, I've used an Interrail earlier this year, because another long train journey I took was I went out to Sicily by train using an Interrail. I had to do, like you said, lots of those reservations. And occasionally it can become a bit difficult. Like one time I left it, I was booking them online. I left it. It was too close to departure time. It was within an hour and I couldn't do it online. I had to find a ticket desk and I only had like an hour. I had to get back to the hotel, get my bags, and you know, it worked out. But those are so part of the logistics along the way.
We had one thing for the traveling back from Bucharest to Budapest. We had to make a reservation, and it was only possible that they sent the reservation to our home place. So they sent the reservation while we were already on the go to Amsterdam, to Loic. Then Loic asked his brother to send the reservation to Istanbul, and of course it got lost somewhere, and we just risked it and went there. We showed the conductor our reservation, like a photo of it, and he said, oh, that's not good, but it's okay. Let's go for it.
Yeah, sometimes you have to wing it a little bit. And, you know, when I was traveling, you know, okay, I had a bag and my ski boots with me in a bag, but you had an awful lot of kit with you. I mean, how did he... So you've got your skis and your boots, but you've got a lot of camera equipment as well, right? You're the producer of the movie, Joy. How many cameras did you have?
Ooh, how many cameras did we have? Like every one of us had a camera, so four cameras. Then, of course, GoPros, another four. We had audio recorders, another four. We had two drones with us, so another two. And that's it, yeah. And a lot of like backup gear for like backing up on the go without taking a laptop. Like we had a little machine to back up all the cards. We did not ever see our footage. It was just saying okay or not okay. And we risked it and we didn't lost any footage. Like everything worked out.
Sorry, I would just say that it was quite stressful for Joy and Loic, because any time that they were putting the SD cards inside these things, they're like, okay, I hope it's going to work. We're not going to lose anything, because you never know until you're back, actually, and you can put it in a computer and see.
Sure. I mean, that must be, you know, very stressful not knowing. And Sylvia, for you, you know, I know you're an extremely accomplished skier, you know, competed in the Free Ride World Tour. Had you done much filming before? Did you get any coaching? Because you have to do a lot of self-filming or use cameras yourself as well.
Yeah, well, self-filming, not so good. I'm known for not using a lot of technology. Also, the GoPros, I have a hard time. So this time it was quite interesting, but also very fun to learn how to like work on the focus and on these cameras that required something more than just like a click and they would do all the stuff. So I did my best and something worked out.
He made some really nice shots, I must say, and he was really, really into it and learned really fast. Congrats on
right.
that.
Right. Because there are four of you in total, just to clarify then. It's yourself, Sylvia and Joy, and then the other two athletes who are with you were Loic Islicker and Max Kronik. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And where did Loic and Max join you from then? Because, you know, you started your journey, Sylvia, in Cortina. You started in Innsbruck, Joy. Where did the other two come from?
Max, he started from Germany, from Munich. And Loic from Verbier.
To start off with, at the beginning of the journey, you all kind of gathered together in Tarvisio I looked it up, actually. I didn't really know where it was. It's right in that corner of Italy, just below Austria and next to
Slovakia,
I think. Slovenia, excuse me. And that was the start the first place where you gathered together for skiing itself. And the conditions there look pretty good.
Yeah, it was really powdery there and the conditions were great. It's a very nice place, that one, because it's, as you said, it's really remote at the corner of Italy. And normally it's not really common to go skiing there or full of people. So we thought it was a good decision to start the journey there as the conditions were good. There was no bus connection to the station, so we had to walk half an hour to get there.
But it's to walk half an hour. No one likes walking in their ski boots, even if you've got nice light ski touring boots. But okay, maybe that wasn't part of the plan. So then from that point, so you're traveling by train, everyone would come in by train and maybe a bit of foot power as well. And after that, you headed to Semmering in Austria. That was the second place that you stopped. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah, we just jumped out there because it was already on the way. This is one of the main train connections in Austria, and it lies exactly between Tarvisio and Vienna. Yeah, you literally jump out of the train, you walk a little bit, and then you are at the lift station. And yeah, as you see in the movie, it was quite different.
Evidently, whenever you're filming, wherever you are, you don't have any control over the conditions. But there were some skiing, some sections where you were skiing on grass in Semmering, and it looked like mainly man-made snow. When you're trying to make a ski movie, that's got to be a challenge to work out a way of coming up with good footage.
Yeah, well, that's the interesting part. As you said, like, you're arriving somewhere and you just have to adapt to what is there. Like, if there's bad snow conditions, yeah, of course, let's try something. And you're not doing the big free ride lines, but you can play around with, if there is a little bit of snow, doesn't matter if it's man-made or natural snow, you can do something and just have fun.
Well, it looked like you were having fun, on the whole of this journey. I'm just interested in, sections like that. I mean, in the movie, I guess, it's probably, a 5-minute segment or something like that, but you must spend a lot of time thinking in advance about what shots you're going to try and line up. And there's a lot of time where you're, waiting around. Is that how it works?
Yeah, like, we were constantly thinking of, okay, we don't want to do the same all the time. Like, we don't want to film like the same angles all the time. We just play around, like, work on new shots, adapt to it. Like, for example, in Slovakia, it's not allowed to fly a drone there. Although it would be super nice footage, but due to environmental reasons, you're not allowed to fly a drone there. So we said, okay, we don't have a drone. Let's adapt to it and make just different shots. Then, of course, in Romania, then we got out the drone again. And that's why all the different stations look really different. And that was a really big part in, like, we were sitting in a train and then thought about, like, okay, we're on the next at the next location. Let's do something different. And that was kind of all the time. Do it different.
Right. Well, that definitely comes across in the film itself. And Sylvia, the next stop after Semmering, you went to Slovakia. I don't know if my pronunciation's correct, but Smokovec, maybe. And Sylvia, you were ski touring there. Is that right?
We were touring in the in the Tatra Mountains. We reached a hut where then we did some lines from there, always on ski touring, and it was super interesting. I loved that place. The snow conditions were not the best, ever easy ones, let's say, but as of an experience, it was very, very nice to discover. I was very shocked when we saw the porters with the beer kegs on the back with these heavy weights, just refueling the huts without any vehicle, no helicopter, no quads, no nothing. And also the motivation of the Slovakian people that was there. It was that the weather was not the best, and they were just going around everywhere, crazy.
Yeah, I mean, I thought that was really, that comes across, you talking about, the journey itself and how, you can become closer to people and meet people along the way. And there's a guy called Thomas who you met in Slovakia, who, just ended up in conversation with and joined along. And as you mentioned, the porter that you're describing there, it kind of reminded me of something I've seen in Nepal or something like that. He's literally got a beer keg, amongst other things, on his back that he's taking up to one of these refuges, which is pretty incredible. And I think you're glossing over the conditions there. I mean, the where you were skiing, that sounded like really shuddering ice that you were skiing over. It made it look quite easy, but that was pretty, pretty hard conditions, right?
Yeah, I think there it's quite normal a bit to have those conditions, a bit icy. And yeah, I say that it was really a cool experience to witness the area. And Chichi, as you said, the Thomas, he was super nice. He actually came from in front of us when we were touring. We saw this guy skiing a cooler in front of us, and we're like, oh, okay, cool. And then we meet. He's like, hey, can I join you? And he explained us a bit of things about the area and the culture and the ski possibilities there. So it was really helpful.
Sure. Well, I mean, it looks fantastic, that section. So far, you know, you've all started from Europe. You've gone into Austria, gone into Slovakia. I think at this point, Sylvia, you went back home. Is that right?
So I don't only do skiing as a job. I also have another job which might seem more normal to people. So I had some issues at work and I had to, unfortunately, leave the train.
And well, possibly you timed it quite well because, you know, there are a lot of long journeys already. But from there, Joy, you went over to Romania. How did you get from Slovakia to Romania?
Yeah, the journey from Slovakia to Romania was quite a long and exhausting one because it was during the night we passed by Budapest. We had a little layover there during the middle of the night. We were really, really tired. And afterwards, it was not the sleeping coach we had. It was just like sitting for 12 hours and changing trains at 4 o'clock in the morning. It was really wild because we didn't sleep much. The timing was so good because we left Slovakia in the evening and then afterwards we just arrived at 8 o'clock in the morning in Romania. So we were quite ready to go on the mountain because the day was ahead of us. It was beautiful, sunny, a beautiful sunny day. But as we got out of the train, we was like, wow, are we really ready for skiing now? Because we didn't sleep that much, but we only have like 30 hours. Let's go for it. We have to do it. Let's get up there.
Right. Well, I mean, but you had, as anyone who's watched the film will know, you had some amazing locations. You said you were allowed to use the drone again in Romania, and the shots that you got there are just stunning. Where was it that you stayed there?
We got out at the Caransebeș, and from there we just went up to the mountain, and it was not a real refuge. Over a friend in Austria, I asked if he knows some people in Romania because my friend here in Austria, he was guiding there already and he gave me a contact. And then I called this guy and said, like, is it possible to sleep over there? There's a hut on the top of the mountain. He said, yeah, it's not a real refuge. It's a meteorology station and it's not open for public. But he will ask the owner or the guy who's working there. And they said, yeah, it's all fine. We can go up and sleep there. Yeah, we even got food over there. And it was really cozy, really nice. We had a bed in there. And we were sleeping so well up there. But we had to get up at very early because of the sunrise. But it was totally worth it. It was really beautiful.
Well, I would say, based having watched the movie, getting up early was worth it because those drone shots are fantastic. And I don't know how far the snow went down, but it really looked incredible. And the guy who was running that that station up there seemed to be quite an eccentric. There were a lot of animals all over the place, right?
Yeah, he has like 3 dogs and 4 cats. They were running around everywhere. We were touring up and all of a sudden a cat was standing on our skis because the snow was too cold. So it just went onto our skis to have rest there. We were like, where's this cat coming from? Whoa. And then there was a dog coming and another dog. And like, okay, getting closer to something.
So that was Romania. Then you went on to Bulgaria. You know, just ticking off countries as they go. And in Bulgaria, you ended up in Borovets. That must have been such a huge contrast from being in the middle of nowhere on the top of the mountain, at this your previous location, and suddenly being in Borovets, which is quite like a lively resort, right?
Yeah, Borovets was like a true shock, I must say. We got out of this bus and then like, well, where are we? Are we in Ischgl or somewhere? Like everywhere après ski and lots of people, crazy going on, and also in the morning, like so many people, so many big hotels, and like, whoa, where are we now? Like, and also like some really modern lifts and some super old lifts there, crazy infrastructure. We managed to get out of the ski resort to make some touring, but the weather wasn't that good there, sadly. Snow was great.
Yeah, it was a night train to Borovets again.
Like the train connection between Romania and Bulgaria is really interesting. You literally go over flat terrain. You might think, yeah, the train can go really fast, but when you see these rails, like they are really curved and really old, and the train mostly just goes like 30 or 40 kilometers an hour. Like it's really, really slow. You're looking out of the window and you think like, with a bike I would be faster than the train, but still there is a train, and it was on time. It was really cozy, let's say it like this. But it was not during the night. It was like more like regional trains, like.
The final leg was from Bulgaria to Turkey, I guess, to Istanbul first, and then Kayseri is the name of the resort. Now that was a night train that was a bit more like what I was on just recently coming back from Italy, where they had couchettes, you actually had beds. That must have felt like luxury compared with your previous journeys.
That was kind of luxury. Yeah, we got in to the night train in Sofia to Istanbul. It's a 12-hour night train, but there is a but. We had a bed, but at 3 or 4 in the morning, you cross the border and they are checking the whole luggage. We had to get out everything out of our coach again, like all the skis which we put into there. We had to get out. They put it through the X-ray and back into the train. Took 2 hours or something, this check, but then we had a nice time in the bed again till we were in Istanbul.
I think in the movie, if I recall, I remember them asking you for your passports, but I'm not sure, probably not very cinematic watching all of your stuff being unpacked and put through. Was that for everyone on the train then?
Everyone had to get out. Everyone had to get out the luggage. We didn't put it in the movie because, of course, it wasn't so easy to film at the border. They are not that happy if you start filming
I'm sure
military
they won't. Yeah,
stuff.
those aren't the circumstances where you want to get anyone, on the wrong side. Right. So you got into Turkey, and I think we kind of referred a little bit earlier. I know you've got lots of different nationalities in your group, but language issues, like when you were trying to make reservations, were a challenge. And you kind of I don't know if you want to call her, you met a local, was her name Esmael?
Esma.
So in Turkey, you met Esma. How did that come about? Because that seemed to be really helpful, because evidently she was able to, translate and help you get about the place.
Yes, true. Like, as we were already on the go for 2 weeks, we were so done with in our brains, like we couldn't arrange anything, kind of. We contacted Esma before on Instagram because a friend of mine was in Turkey before, like 2 years before. And he met Esma already there, and my friend said, like, yeah, let's contact Esma. She's the best contact you can have. And it was really, really like this. Like, she took her hand and said that we need to go there, we go there. Where do you want to go? I arrange it. It was super helpful.
I bet it was, because you mentioned there you've been on the road, and it was hard to concentrate. There was a point which you do include within the movie where I think Max found the concentration a little bit harder. He went missing at one point.
Yeah, that was really a pity. Like, we were on the bus and we went on the Ankara bus station for a break. But what you have to imagine, like the bus station in Ankara is huge. It's insanely big. It's bigger than an airport in Munich, for example. It has four levels, and on each level there are 110 or 120 lanes, which all have a number. And we just went out of the bus doing some stretching and relaxing, and Max decided, yeah, he's going to the toilet quickly. And then the bus driver said, oh, I'm on the wrong lane. He turned on the engine and said, like, yeah, I'm going down two layers down on lane 86 or something. And we were like, oh, where's Max? And we jumped in and the bus already changed the layer. And then we were there like, oh my God, what are we going to do now? There are thousands of people in the middle of the night on that Ankara bus station, and it was impossible to find him again. We tried to ask at the information that they can call out his name, but they refused to do it in English, so they only did it in Turkish. And of course, they said, Max Frones, but he never heard that.
Fortunately, there is a happy ending to that, in that I'm guessing he found someone and then persuaded them to use their phone to send a message or something.
Yes, it was funny because he went back where the bus was before, and there was another guy who already got dropped off, and he didn't know where the bus went, and he just went to Max and said, your friends, gone, he said. And then he helped him to book a new bus, and he even paid for his bus because Max didn't have anything with him. It was really, really nice. And then we found him again in Kayseri like 8 hours later. He suddenly arrived there.
Well, that is fantastic. Sylvia, were you in contact with the rest of the team still? Were you following all of this from back in Italy?
Yeah, well, we had a WhatsApp group, let's say, and they were sending pictures and things, and it was quite funny. And yeah, I was laughing a lot, actually, looking at the images or the things that they were speaking with each other. Okay, let's get this train or maybe that one. And it was like if I was there a bit.
So you finished off then, Joy, at skiing in Turkey. I think you skied a couple of places there, but Mount Hasan was the final point, and it looked pretty good there as well. Great snow, right?
Yeah, like we've been in Kayseri at the Mount Argeus, and it was quite tricky there because it snowed a lot and we had a lot of wind, and we dug a lot of pits to check the snow layer, and it was really, really weak, and the ski lines would have been perfect, but we were kind of like, "Pooh, we don't want to risk it. It doesn't feel right. It doesn't feel right." And we were thinking, "Oh God, we can't finish with that one. Like, what shall we do?" And Esma was constantly like giving us options. We can go there. We can go there. We can go there. We can go there. And we checked. Oh yeah. And the closest one was Mount Hasan. We said, "Yeah, this could be an option. We don't have much time left. We can make it. We go there and go up there in the afternoon and probably be there at the sundowner." It turned out really, really well. It was like really on the edge to make it, but we did it, and that was the perfect ending. Like the sun was going down. Like Mount Hasan is really in the middle of nowhere. It's just sticking out of this huge plateau, and you have a absolute mesmerizing view up there. It was a great, great ending.
A fantastic way to finish off, and great footage there. Although, you know, in the film, that's where it ends. But you did actually have to go back all the way. And I kind of wondered when I got there, are they going to fly back? But no, you took the trains and buses and metro. Well, did you do that all in one go? Because on the way out, you'd obviously split up that journey many times. It must have been a super long journey going back.
Yeah, from Mount Hasan, we went via Ankara to Istanbul. I had a little layover there, like for 20 hours or something, and exploring the city a bit and enjoying. And then from Istanbul back to Innsbruck, it took 2.5 days. But I must say, this was really, really relaxing. Chilling in the train, every connection was already set up. Like we just had to change the trains on time. and enjoying the ride, like no more skiing in between, no more logistics to where can we ski, what can we do, what do we have to film. Now we put away the cameras as well, played a lot of Uno and were sleeping a lot. Yeah, especially the train from Bucharest to Budapest, it took 17 hours or something, but in the sleeping coach it was really relaxing, and came back home like really relaxed, not stressed out, but with good sleep and stuff like that.
And especially when you had a look at the SD cards and realized that all the footage looked good, because it must have been only when you got back that you were able to look at that for the first time.
Yes, like on the next day after I came home, I just had to plug in the SSD and check like, oh, what is there? Like, oh, yeah, everything is there. Oh, checking out this. Oh, there's another. And then it took quite some time to really look over the footage. And it was really surprising because then you saw it for the first time what the others filmed. Of course, I kind of remember what I filmed, but it was super surprising. Like, wow, look at this shot. Oh, I couldn't imagine it. That they filmed that, that's super nice. And then the editing start.
Excellent. So Sylvia had learned from the lessons that you gave her. And the editing process then, how long did that take?
Well, the editing. Yeah, we kind of started a few weeks after that, like after setting up, sorting out the footage, setting up the project. I think we started in beginning of May with the editing process, and it took... Yeah, till the mid of August. Yeah, 3.5 months. Loic and I edited like constantly.
The final result is extremely impressive, and I'll put a link to it in the show notes so listeners can have a look at it. I'm interested in what you thought that you learn from that experience, and also would you consider doing it again? What about yourself, Sylvia? What do you think? What did you learn from taking those journeys, and would you do it again?
I would do it again, actually, also because I wasn't able to finish all of it. So actually when I was going back alone, I was thinking, wow, it's really doable actually to do things like this. And sometimes we forget, or I forgot, that it could be a bit more tiring and a bit more effort to do this kind of journey. But actually, at the end, the reward is much bigger, and you get home much happier than just in another way of traveling or another trip, actually.
Yeah, that's a great summary. What about yourself, Joy? Would you do that again? It was a pretty a monumental effort.
Yes, for sure. Like I would go for it right away. For me, like the biggest learning, or even the feeling, as we've spent so many hours on the train and buses and stuff, like, and now like if I go with the bus for 1 hour to go skiing somewhere, it's super relaxing. It's so short, like, yeah, sure, I put my skis in there and sitting down, and oh, it's 1 hour already, like, oh, that was too fast.
Yeah. Suddenly, like, people who think, oh God, this is taking such a long time, it definitely gives you appreciation of this, and everything that you get during the journey as well, so many different things that you see, and within the movie, the people you meet along the way and the experiences. I mean, yourself, Sylvia, Loic and Max are going to have memories from that trip that you'll never forget, particularly Max, perhaps, for the rest of your life there. Well, that's brilliant. Thank you so much, Sylvia and Joy. It's a brilliant film. It's called Going East. It's a new film from Arc'teryx. Thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
It was a pleasure.
Yeah.
Right, I really enjoyed that conversation. I hope you did too. I enjoy all feedback about the show. I'm always interested to hear what you think. So please do contact me on social at Ski Podcast, or by email theskipodcast@gmail.com. Now, Paul Bond contacted me to say, inspired by the podcast, he's also been travelling by train this winter. We took the train to Zermatt and Hintertux. The latter was great, but we had some bad luck on the return from Zermatt, as it was the day of that unexploded bomb in Paris. Listeners might remember that. It wasn't quite as bad as a recent fire at Heathrow, but a lot of cancelled trains. Bill Blaine contacted me to tell me about his favourite resort, which I've promised not to reveal. I'm currently suffering shin splints after an epic tumble, chapped lips and terrible sunburn after 10 days in name of resort. You must promise never, ever to talk about name a resort, the most perfect ski resort on the planet. Bill doesn't want people going there, and I think I've managed to hide it. I should add, Bill wanted to remind listeners that if they're buying the Epic Pass, they need to make sure they get the right one. He feels he was misled by the company he booked with on an earlier trip this season to Whistler, as they recommended the wrong pass to get the discounts he wanted. So watch out for that. There are now 255 episodes of the Ski Podcast to catch up with, and 151 of those were listened to in the last week. If you've enjoyed this episode, why not go to theskipodcast.com, look around the tags and categories. There is so much in there, you're bound to find something of interest. In the last week, 60% of our listeners were in the UK, the next most in the States, and everyone else spread as far and wide as Morocco, South Africa, and Ecuador. And if you like the podcast, there are three things you can do to help. You can follow us, you can give us a review or leave us a comment on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. And of course, if you do that this week, then you're going to the draw to win the Vallon Sunnies. You can book your ski hire with InterSport Rent using the code SKIPODCAST or take the link in the show notes. You can follow me at Skipedia, the podcast at the Ski Podcast. You can also follow us on WhatsApp for exclusive material released ahead of each podcast. Look in the show notes for that link. I'd like to thank Sylvia and Joy for joining me to talk about their epic trip. Don't forget, you can watch Going East on YouTube, and you can find that link in the show notes. Finally, listener, thank you for joining us wherever in the world you're listening right now. And until next time, goodbye.